the dark properties seem attractive right now because it's cash flow for basically nothing, but you have to be thinking down the line, okay, when it's time to rent this out, what am I going to do with it? Who's the tenant that's going to occupy this space?
Welcome to Surgeon Syndicate. If you're paying attention, you know that you only make money when you work. It might be great money, but it's dependent on you. The information on this podcast will help you solve that. We interview experts and provide analysis into financial freedom through commercial real estate. Why? To help physicians like you thrive. Let's dive in.
Welcome back to Surgeon Syndicate. This is your host, Dr. Michael McManus, and we are here again today with Jonathan Hayek. And we're discussing right now single tenant, commercial property, triple net leases. It's a great asset to own and one that most people don't know a lot about. And there's a lot of advantages to that. But right now, let's dive back into the conversation and some further discussion on single tenant industrial triple net properties. And what kind of lead time do you get then on, because you talked a little bit, if somebody wants out. So they've got a 10-year lease right now. They find a place and they come and they say, Jonathan, I'd like out of our lease.
If you have a 10-year lease, you're not getting out of that lease. I mean, everything is negotiable. If I feel like there's something about that lease, maybe they're paying below market rent, maybe I would offer them some sort of buyout. But that's the thing about leases. If they have a 10-year lease, they're probably not looking for another place. The only way they can really get out of that lease is if they file for bankruptcy. And so that's really the benefit of these long-term leases. And it's a benefit for me as the landlord, but it's also a benefit to the tenant. These tenants rely on these properties for their livelihood. These are not crash pads, like a one-bedroom apartment that they might go back to. These properties are responsible for their livelihoods, their income generators. They're also likely responsible for other people's livelihoods if they have employees. So this is not some haphazard decision of whether to continue leasing the space. These are really important, serious decisions that these tenants do not take lightly. And so these long-term leases give the tenants peace of mind. They now know 3, 5, or 10 years out what their rent is going to be. And so as the tenants are making projections for their business about how much money, what are my expenses going to be, what is my income going to be, they can project out the length of this lease, what is my rent going to be 3 years from now. And so these long-term leases are really a benefit to the tenant as well. And my tenants often want long-term leases, because they know they've looked out in the market and they've seen what other options are out there. If they get asked to leave their current property, they know that they're going to have a really hard time finding somewhere else to go. And in a lot of cases, it's going to be a matter of paying double for something newer or simply closing up shop because they have nowhere else to go.
Did they ever come to you ahead of time to renegotiate an extension? So they got a 10-year lease, 5 years out, they're like, business is good. We don't want to worry about coming up on the end of our lease. Let's start the process now to add that stability.
Not yet. I've yet to have a tenant with a 10-year lease. My longest lease I have right now is 5 years. And I'm starting talks with another tenant that's been there 40 plus years. They want a long-term lease because they're out in the marketplace looking for other places, and they realize that they're just not going to find what they want. And so most leases call for between 3 to 6 months before lease expiration. And really, all leases are different. And so it can vary from property to property. Some leases just have a default that if there's an option and you say nothing within 3 months or 4 months or 6 months, the option automatically kicks in. Some leases will say, if you don't tell me, then I'm assuming you're leaving, and then I'm going to start marketing the property. I tend to have a very high communication emphasis with my tenants. And so regardless of if I've heard from them, I reach out to them regardless and just say, hey, your lease is coming up. I'd love for you to stay. What are you thinking? Do you want to talk about coming to terms on a new lease? And more than likely, they say, yep, we want to stay. Give us an LOI of what the new lease is going to look like.
Okay. And so an LOI, for anybody who's, some of our listeners are newer, is a letter of intent. Just since we're here for education, explain a little bit how that works, an LOI versus a lease.
Sure. An LOI is a non-binding proposal. So it can get signed at the bottom. It's non-binding. It's not a contract, but it outlines, it's one or two pages, and outlines the terms of a potential lease or contract. You can do this when you're making offers on properties. I also send LOIs for lease proposals. And so it's going to outline the potential length of the lease that I'm proposing, the cost, if there are any increases. It's a way to come to terms and come to agreement on the basic parameters and the outline of the lease without going straight to a 20-page document. Once you agree on that LOI, the tenant might say, yep, sounds good, write it up in a lease, and we'll have our attorney look it over. Attorneys are often involved in the lease process just to make sure the tenant's bases are covered. And so even after agreement is come to on the LOI, there can still be some back and forth on the actual lease itself. There are some things that can be negotiable. Who pays when the furnace goes out? Who's going to pay for that? If the insurance goes up by more than 50%, who's going to be responsible for the overage? And so there are some small things that continue to be negotiated in leases. And attorneys, whenever attorneys get involved, they can find some nitpicky things and some wording, and they might want some things to be reworded. But an LOI, I like to start with that just as an easy way. It's a little more formal. It's just going back and forth on email or a phone call. And it's a way to get ideas down on paper in a slightly more formal way than email.
Okay. So, and what we talked about, we started with multifamily and then, you know, have moved to talking about industrial. And I think the lease difference is a big deal here, because a lot of your leases for residential properties are, there's rules. States have all kinds of laws about how you can structure a lease and what you can require from people. But a commercial lease, there's really no rules. Tell me a little bit, just explaining to our listeners about that difference, because I think a lot of people, as I've talked to them, they think about all leases kind of being the same, that leasing an apartment and leasing a warehouse not really being any different.
Sure. Yeah. Like you said, a lot of states will have different rules and laws pertaining to residential units. And so we've heard terms like landlord friendly versus tenant friendly. That largely is attributed to residential leases, where certain states will have more protection for residential tenants because they don't want unscrupulous landlords coming in and being unfair, kicking people out, charging exorbitant fees, things like that. On the commercial side, those landlord versus tenant friendly rules largely do not apply. Commercial leases are more viewed as a contract between two parties. And while evictions in commercial spaces can and do happen, I have fortunately never had to deal with them. Because businesses, if you're leasing to a reputable business and you've checked financials and they're a legitimate business doing business in multiple states and they have revenue in the millions or tens or hundreds of millions of dollars, they know that they cannot get out of that lease. They could stop paying their rent, but they know it's a guaranteed losing proposition when they get taken to court, and they're going to be responsible for that entire lease. It's possible that you could rent a warehouse to a mom and pop tenant who have no net worth. And so, you know, in that situation, that the landlord probably doesn't have a lot of recourse of going after the tenant, much like a residential tenant. I've had to do one eviction in my, out of having 50 residential units. I've had other tenants come to me saying, hey, something came up. I had a tenant a few months ago say, hey, I got married. We're buying a house. We have 6 months left on the lease. Can I find some way of getting out of this lease? I tend to be pretty friendly with my tenants. I don't want to hold anyone to a lease. If I'm talking residential, these are people with $0 in net worth. They're working hourly jobs. I have no interest in going after my residential tenants to get the $4,800 that they owe me. And so with residential tenants, I usually have some sort of buyout where they pay me a month or two of rent in exchange for getting out of their 6 or 8 months remaining, because I know I'm going to be able to rent that out. And so I actually come out ahead financially. I'd prefer for my tenant to stay and not have to fill the vacancy, but I'm not here to stand in the way of my residential tenants moving on with their lives. On the commercial side, totally different story. If I know my tenant did $100 million in revenue last year, they're not getting out of that lease. And so, like I said earlier, I might negotiate some sort of 50% or 75% buyout. But even then, I have very low motivation to negotiate with a tenant who's doing hundreds of millions of dollars of revenue. So totally different game in the commercial world when it comes to leases.
Well, and that's interesting that you see some of the corporate guaranteed leases that a company may pull out of a location, but they're still responsible for the lease and they keep paying it without question.
Sure. And you'll see examples of properties going dark. And so this is happening with drugstores right now, but it happens with all kinds of properties where a company, a large company, we'll have a lease for 5 or 7 or 10 more years, and we say it goes dark. That means the tenant moves out, but they continue paying the lease because they know they're responsible for it. Whether or not they're occupying it or they have employees going there, they know they're going to continue to be responsible for paying that rent and keeping it up. And so that's another huge benefit of commercial leases.
Well, and then you can do things that sometimes that's the value add of the investment. And I think I'd had a talk with a doc about this once, and they were talking about, so somebody has, let's say, a Walgreens and a building's gone dark. They've got 8 years left on the lease. And so you negotiate with them that because, you know, you have somebody else who wants to lease it. And so you can negotiate it. They pay 4 of their last 8 years up front, and they get out of the lease. And now you can lease it to somebody else. And they're like, wait, is that legal that they just paid you 4 years worth of rent? And now you're going to rent it to somebody else and you can do that? And there's the great part about commercial leases, because they're contracts between business people. You know?
Yeah, and it's a buyout and everything is negotiable. And for that business, it's a calculation. So they could be on the hook for 8 more years on that lease, but instead they could get out with only paying for 4 years. And so it's just a calculated decision on the business side. It was calculated decision to start out, to shut down the business. It was obviously not making money or did not make sense to continue to have that Walgreens open. For whatever reason, they were paying their employees and operating costs and things like that. So to them, it just made sense to shut it down, and they were willing to continue to pay rent for the remainder of the lease and instead of continuing to operate the business. But that stuff that we're talking about, that is advanced level stuff. There's a massive amount of risk, because if you buy that dark Walgreens with 8 years left on the lease, you have to be asking yourself, okay, in 8 years, what are you going to be doing with it? Because a lot of those drugstores signed these ridiculous leases with really high rents, and the purchase price is commensurate with the high amount of rent that they're paying. And so you have to assume that whoever the tenant comes in after Walgreens or Rite Aid or whatever went dark, they're going to be paying less. And so that's going to impact the value of your building. And so the dark properties seem attractive right now because it's cash flow for basically nothing. But you have to be thinking down the line, okay, when it's time to rent this out, what am I going to do with it? Who's the tenant that's going to occupy the space?
And that's a great point, because if the commercial buildings typically are worth what you can rent them for, it's a multiplier of the rent you're bringing in and not so much like a house what somebody just thinks it's worth. In 8 years, that's a great deal for 8 years. But in 8 years, if nobody else wants to rent it, now it's essentially worthless. And that's where you will see there. I saw a bank branch for sale in a small town that was a 4,000 square foot building. And it was for sale for it started at $500,000 and 400, 300, 200, 100. It's on the market at 17 cents a square foot. Because it really, nobody needed it anymore. And there's the risk. You said in your bio that a big thing that doctors should know in this space is focus less on big returns and more on safe returns. We'll get back to our show in a minute, but first I want to offer you an opportunity to accelerate your learning. My life changed and my ability to start becoming a work optional changed when I gained the people and the knowledge to start investing in commercial real estate. One of the key people there was Ash Patel, and joining his Invest Beyond Multifamily Mastermind. With that, I had the people and the knowledge. Well, that mastermind is no longer open, but for a fraction of the price, Ash has now made a course, and this is probably the most valuable set of information, the quickest way to move along your learning curve. So if you are interested in actively investing in commercial real estate and retail and industrial and office, I would recommend this course to you. We're going to include a pre-sale link both in the show notes. It'll also be on the surgeonsyndicate.com website. And in your checkout, we'll save you another 1%. I know it's not a lot, but every little bit helps if you use the discount code MIKE1487. So take that step now and move your future forward. If you're not interested in investing actively, give us a call here at Fortress Capital and let's talk about what your goals are as a passive investor. But it's time to stop listening, start acting, and let's move your future forward. So tell me more about your philosophy there, because there's a lot of things that can be done in the commercial space that can make a deal safe and de-risked that a lot of people have never heard of.
Sure. I first like to start out with talking about vacant properties. And my opinion is that buying vacant properties has a tremendous amount of risk for the everyday investor, even like you and me. My first commercial deal was a vacant property. I had no idea what I was doing. It worked out well. The location and the setup of the building saved me. A lot of times, you'll hear investors talking about the amazing opportunity in this vacant property. It's priced at $34 a square foot or $120 a square foot. You can't build it for that. But you have to understand that vacant properties come with a tremendous amount of risk. It's not like filling up an apartment. And so if you have, say, a single tenant industrial building or a single tenant retail building, and it's 8,000 square feet, and your thought is, wow, this thing is so cheap, I'm just going to find a tenant and I'll get a tenant in there and I'll make tons of money. That might happen or it might not happen. So when you're buying vacant properties, you have to understand that there's a chance that that could be vacant for 12 months or 24 months or longer. There's a chance that you could find a tenant really fast and things might work out okay. But it comes back to knowing your market and having relationships in the market. And so one strategy could be buying vacant properties in a market in which you know you have a good relationship with leasing brokers and you have a really good feeling that, hey, I'm going to buy this property and I feel like in 6 months or less, I'm going to get it rented because I have a good enough relationship with leasing brokers and they're telling me that they can get it filled. But understand that making money on that vacant property is contingent on getting it leased up. And you take on a tremendous amount of risk when you buy a vacant property. There are other things you can do to reduce risk. I personally feel like if I'm an extremely high net worth person and I am interested in capital preservation, my top priorities are going to be on safety. And so I'm speaking in generalities right now, and there are exceptions to everything. But in general, occupied properties are going to be lower risk. Properties in larger growing markets are going to be lower risk. You had mentioned earlier, there's about a vacant property in a rural area. Just simply by numbers, there are going to be fewer options for tenants to take properties, to lease properties in low population areas. So if you find a low population area, maybe the population is decreasing, that's going to be a riskier investment. Not to say you can't make money in small markets or markets with decreasing populations. Those populations, those markets need businesses as well. But the sure, safer bet is going to be in markets like my buy box is in markets with 100,000 people or more. If it's lower than that, I just don't look at it. There's too much risk for me. Growing markets, the population has to be increasing. If the population is decreasing, again, that's just too much risk for me. And then I look at vacancy rates in that area. I talk to brokers, I look online for vacancy rates. I was looking at one deal in Indiana recently that ticked a lot of my boxes. In general, I look for deals with expiring leases and below market rents. That's my value add. And I found a property that ticked all those boxes. I talked with some brokers about vacancy. What are you seeing in the market in terms of vacancy rates? And these brokers were surprisingly honest with me. And the consensus was expect this building to be vacant for 12 months or more. So their thought was for this particular property, the location and the makeup of it, expect to have 12 months of vacancy. And where I'm at in my investing journey, I'm not interested in having 12 months of vacancy. There might be people out there that have really patient money and they think they buy such a great property. It's got so much upside that they're willing to have a considerable amount of vacancy. I'm not at that point in my investing journey. And I think for high net worth people like doctors, I think buying stabilized assets, maybe with some light value add, so maybe you can capture some upside in high growth markets with good demographics, I think those kind of tick the boxes of a safe investment for me.
That's great. So large enough market, there's demand. You like over 100,000 market that's growing versus shrinking. And they're not empty. Those are right. The big three.
Yeah. And I look for the quality of the property. So for instance, if I'm buying an industrial property, I'm looking at the size of the property. So I know properties, if it's single tenant, 10,000 square feet or smaller, those properties are going to be pretty easy to lease out. And also the proportion of office versus warehouse, because a flex property is office warehouse. Part of it is office where they take phone calls and there's a bookkeeper and office worker, and then part of it is warehouse. In a 10,000 square foot property, I would really want about 75% of that to be warehouse, because after that, it just gets to be too much office space. A lot of these blue collar plumbing company or a landscaping company, they just don't need that much office space. They need warehouse space to store vehicles and materials and things like that. And then finally, we didn't talk about an operator. And so if you're looking to invest with someone else, if you're not going to be the general partner, if you're going in on someone else's deal, track record, that is the biggest thing that I look for. Has this operator done this before? Do they have a track record of success? Because history does not predict the future, but it's a pretty good indicator. And so if somebody has had success doing this type of deal before, chances are they're going to have success moving forward. They're going to be able to roll with the punches if something unexpected does come up. And so really vetting that operator and understanding if they have experience in this area.
We're getting close to the end here, but for somebody looking to invest passively, do you have any key questions you would to ask that operator besides finding out their level of experience?
Yeah, starts with experience. You can ask about when has a deal not gone well? What did you do about it? What's your best deal? What's your worst deal? On this deal that we're talking about, what's the worst thing that could happen? What's the worst case scenario? And what would you do about it? How are you planning for the unexpected things? Things you're not even thinking about, the unknown unknowns, because things can happen that we don't expect. And so what's your contingency plan for the unknowns? You can ask about communication. How do you communicate with your investors? Do you communicate monthly, quarterly? How does that come? Do I have your phone number? Will you email me quarterly reports? How should I expect my returns? Do I get monthly returns, quarterly returns? It is okay to ask the seemingly obvious questions. If you're investing your hard-earned money into this deal, it's okay to ask some of those questions that maybe you think are obvious, maybe you feel like you should know, but go ahead and ask it, because it's better to ask it and know it rather than to not ask and be surprised later on.
Are there any red flags for you?
Beginners, people that have never done this before. Everyone has had mistakes, and it's okay to have mistakes. I think understanding how people bounce back from their mistakes, how people try to not repeat their mistakes. So maybe if they got burned in some way in the past with choosing bad debt or making mistakes in due diligence, and they're not learning from their mistakes, making the same mistake repeatedly, that would be a red flag. Having overly rosy projections, that would be a red flag. Maybe if you're talking with five different operators and they're all kind of roughly in the same area in terms of what returns they're offering, and then one is an outlier in offering these ridiculous returns, that should raise a red flag if somebody is promising outsized returns. If somebody is not professional, someone doesn't operate themselves, maybe they don't have professional documents, they don't work with attorneys, they try to get things solved the cheap way instead of the right way in terms of setting up the structure, in terms of contractors and making repairs to properties. It's a good thing to be smart with money, but you also want to be working with a professional. And so those are some things that I would be looking for.
Awesome. Are there any last bits of wisdom before we wrap up here you'd like to pass on to any of our listeners?
If listeners want to connect with me and learn more about me, I have a podcast that specializes in non-residential commercial real estate. We talk about industrial, office, retail. I talk with brokers, lenders, all kinds of different people. So the name of my podcast is The Source of Commercial Real Estate. Feel free to listen to that podcast, and you can also reach out to me on LinkedIn, Jonathan Hayek on LinkedIn. Real estate is a long game, and I think high net worth people should be most concerned about capital preservation, especially in the current market that we're in. And so maybe foregoing some of those promises of high, ridiculous returns with new investors in favor of people with an established track record that have done this before, have experience of success, is the smart way to go in this market.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Jonathan. We'll include LinkedIn contact in the show notes. I don't have them down here, but I'll reach out to the team and make sure we get your podcast included in the show notes, because Jonathan is one of the people that inspires my show and that I try and learn from. So thank you so much for being here. And thank you to all of our listeners. Reach out to me if you have any questions, or if there's things you like or dislike about the show, let us know. Fill out a review. That helps people find us. And again, thank you for joining us today on The Surgeon Syndicate.
We'll get back to our show in a minute, but first I want to offer you an opportunity to accelerate your learning. My life changed, and my ability to start becoming work optional change when I gained the people and the knowledge to start investing in commercial real estate. One of the key people there was Ash Patel, and joining his Invest Beyond Multifamily Mastermind. With that, I had the people and the knowledge. Well, that mastermind is no longer open, but for a fraction of the price, Ash has now made a course, and this is probably the most valuable set of information and quickest way to move along your learning curve. So if you are interested in actively investing in commercial real estate, in retail, in industrial, in office, I would recommend this course to you. We're going to include a pre-sale link both in the show notes. It'll also be on the surgeonsyndicate.com website. And in your checkout, we'll save you another 1%. I know it's not a lot, but every little bit helps if you use the discount code MIKE1487. So take that step now and move your future forward. If you're not interested in investing actively, give us a call here at Fortress Capital. And let's talk about what your goals are as a passive investor. But it's time to stop listening, start acting, and let's move your future forward. This has been an episode of Surgeon Syndicate. If you found value in this episode, no other surgeons are hungry to become job optional. You can help them by sharing this content today. I also want to serve you better, so I want to offer you two things. Number one, I'll be able to give you the content in an even better way if you can take a moment and leave an honest review of the show explaining what you like and what you don't. Number two, if you are a surgeon and serious about this, you don't want to do this on your own because you don't want to make mistakes with your money. I'd be happy to help. Schedule a call and we can make a plan. I'm looking forward to having you with me on the next episode.